good to be here. I don't know what's going on, but I'm ready.
Well, you're on a podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
If young dudes had the coolest possible dude-oriented party, what would that be? I don't even know what that is, but maybe you guys can help me figure it out. Corvette, dude will deserve it.
A Corvette flies out of a helicopter with fire and machine guns and an eagle.
Exactly. Eggs.
Hey everyone, and welcome to The Inside, a podcast where we get into the extraordinary minds and experiences of everyday people. I'm Jay, and with me, as always, is Adam. What is up, Adam?
Oh, you know, I'm just trying to really get some stuff with my future figured out, and one of the big things I'm looking at is figuring out some living arrangements.
Of course you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there's some really cool places that people are living in now, you know, like... Have you thought about like something like an igloo or like a yurt or like a teepee? Although they're making like little tiny teepees now. Tiny stuff's popular.
I'm thinking about something just a little more traditional.
Man, you're no fun at all.
Hey.
Ever.
I'm just going to ignore you. All right. Let's get some listener input. Like, guys, should I get a camper, apartment, a home, a tiny home? Should I rent or buy? Or... Jay and listeners, I've even heard of building your own home because I feel like building your own home can be really complicated and frustrating, but you also get to kind of pick like exactly what your vision is for where you want to live, which could be cool.
Yeah. I don't know if that's for you though, man. What? Because yeah, remember back in the Rachel Gibby episode, the introduction, and like you didn't even know what tools went into building a deck. So yeah, I bet if you tried to personally build a house, like it'd be a disaster.
Hey,
but you know, I bet one thing you would be good at though, if you like really insisted on doing it, would be the design part, because you have a really good attention to detail and you're super creative.
Thanks, so, man. I mean, yeah, you could see me just yelling at that contractor, right? Like, this tile's a quarter centimeter off from where it should be.
They would not want you on the job site. But I could see you enjoying deciding stuff, you know, like if it gets a deck and where it goes and like the chimney design and like maybe a slip and slide from the second floor window down to the pool, stuff like that.
Yeah. What about what about like a dragon cage? I mean, you're right though. I don't think I could pull off anything that elaborate, Jay, especially the second story slip and slide. Like if I decided to design a house myself, I think it'd be more like one of those lean-to shelters that people build in survival classes.
Oh, yeah, or like with a dragon cage.
Yeah,
like, a tiny,
you're not getting out of there, dragon, with the sticks.
I think a tiny lean-to shelter with a dragon cage. Yeah. You know, Adam, regardless of your skills as a home designer and your website, which we'll push right now, it's called ibuildcrappyhomes.com. Our guest today pulled off something that's actually really impressive and elaborate. He's an artist sculptor out of Durham, North Carolina.
Ooh, go Piedmont!
Chill. Well, his name is Robert, and he's building a house that actually looks like a castle. Wow. And according to him, Adam, he didn't even have a design.
Yeah, but Jay, did he have a dragon cage?
Well, I think there's some talk about a dungeon. But I don't know about Dragon Cage, Adam. Yeah, what I do know is that it really couldn't have been very easy, especially because he's done the bulk of the work all by himself.
Wow, that's really impressive.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's bring him on. Let's hear more about it.
I can't wait, man. But after that, then can we ask him about the dragon cage?
Adam, jeez, man. Let's just go to the fake commercial.
No, we got to finish up the dragon cage.
No, let go of the dragon cage.
No, it's an important part of the
interview.
It's
not.
I swear.
Let it go.
Hey, Jay, you know how sometimes you're tired and just don't have the energy for something?
Yeah, Adam, I do. Life can be so tiring. Mm-hmm. Like today, I was putting away the dishes and I was done. Adam, I had to close the cabinet doors. It was like the most looming task. I just couldn't do it, Adam.
Well, Jay, worry no more, because thanks to the Buddy Butler, the little things in life won't seem as daunting.
Wow, Adam. So Buddy Butler is like a real person or a cyborg?
Exactly, Jay.
But wait, it's What?
So, Jay, Buddy Butler is here to help you with all the small stuff that seems overwhelming to make your life just a little bit easier.
Oh.
Like yesterday, Jay, I was making dinner and just couldn't get the knife out of the knife block. Mm. So Buddy Butler got the knife out of the knife block for me. Wow. Then I used the knife to do meal prep for 4 hours, cooked a five-course meal, and did all the dishes. Thanks, Buddy Butler. I could have never gotten that process started without you.
Wow, so Buddy Butler will open the door to my shed so I can get out the snow shovel, walk the 2 miles down the driveway, salt the roads, and shovel for 3 hours?
Buddy Butler, Jay.
Wow, or when I need someone to turn on the lights so I can vacuum, dust, and hang the drywall in the castle I'm building?
Buddy Butler again.
Wow, Adam, Buddy Butler sounds like he does all the heavy lifting.
Exactly, Jay. Buddy Butler makes life more complicated than you need it to be for just the smallest things in life. Now, you won't have to worry about who's going to help you start all those overwhelming projects. So use the link in our bio to get 1 free month of Butler food. Order your Buddy Butler today.
So it's a man then, right, Adam? Adam. Dang it, Adam. Well, hey, Robert, welcome to the Inside Podcast. We're super pumped to have you here. Thanks for accepting our invitation and joining us.
Thanks, Jay. Adam, it's good to be here. I don't know what's going on, but I'm ready.
Well, you're on a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Robert, let's just go ahead and jump right in. Does that sound cool?
Yep.
Cool. Well, you are one of the few people who can say that they own a real castle. It's located just outside Durham, North Carolina, at Red Mountain in Roguemont, North Carolina, and has had over 40,000 visitors, which to me, that's pretty cool. Like, not a lot of people can say that.
It's kind of strange. I mean, I wasn't really expecting that when I first got the land, but it's just really been a process.
Well, could you paint for us like an auditory picture? Like, describe for our listeners, like, what we're talking about.
Just north of Durham, there's a hill called, I'd call it a hill, I don't know, but it's called Red Mountain. Okay. And the little area is called Rougemont, and which is obviously French for Red Mountain. It's the highest point, my land actually, is the highest point between itself and, say, France or even South Africa. You could draw a line anywhere east or south, really, in this hemisphere. It's the highest point. And so I found this land. It was kind of, it was just, you know, isolated. And I thought I would build myself a little getaway place in the country where I could make my art. And I started building. I didn't have any blueprints or anything. And I started building just a room and then another floor. And because of its pretty blue foothills view, I just kept building up in the air. And then eventually I started putting spires on the roof and or pinnacles, and it looks a little, you know, someone might think of it as kind of Disney-like, and it's just it. And, you know, of course I'm an artist, so obviously I'm trying to design a thing that's, you know, attractive, right, or interesting to me, but it's turned into just a total magnet for all kinds of craziness and people.
How tall is it?
I mean, I guess from the highest point, it's probably about 60, 70 feet.
I've seen on some of the videos you're like rappelling off the roof and stuff. So it's high enough to rappel off of. How did you find the property? Like, how did you become the owner of that and all that?
Well, the funny thing is I was, at the time, I mean, this is like in the 1990s. I was searching through back then. It was sort of pre-internet, and I was searching through multiple listings, guides of real estate. And I was really just looking for tracts of 15 or more acres that, And that necessarily for my budget meant isolated. And wherever I went, there was a cell tower or something like that. And I found this land. And I think maybe what wasn't attractive about it to people, why it was such a good deal at the time, was it was very steep. But to me, I thought the steepness was cool. Because, you know, you guys are more out toward the west. But where I am, you know, in the triangle area, it just starts flattening out all the way to the coast. And so it's the first big bump of the Appalachians.
Well, you mentioned that like it started out as this cabin that kind of just evolved into the castle that we know today. What's the construction process been like in this whole thing?
To begin with, I was really just sort of doing everything myself. I got a backhoe and I started clawing away at the earth, and then poured some concrete, started laying concrete blocks. And it's necessarily, I mean, kind of just been a slow process. Mm. And I mean, that's one salient aspect of it, that it's been glacially slow. But then there was a point when I abandoned it for like 14 years when the roof wasn't quite finished, which is highly impractical.
Right. how did you learn how to like lay foundation and like do masonry work? Like
run a backhoe.
Like it takes some, run a backhoe. That sounds like it takes some engineering or architectural knowledge to pull something that big off. Did you go to school for that kind of stuff, or did you just pick it up growing up, or what?
I think it's just a childlike naivete where I think if another man can do it, I can do it.
Well, and you're known to be a sculptor, right? Like,
that's right.
I read where you have some gargoyles and things like that out there. And I'd like to hear about that a little bit too, but maybe this was just like, okay, I'm going for something bigger.
That was pretty much it. I mean, my sculpture work, I kind of just approached it the same way. At the time, when I was 21, which was decades ago, and I wasn't sophisticated enough to know where to go for training. I mean, I would tell someone maybe go apprentice in Pietrasanta or something now, or at least go to Google if you're trying to learn how to do something, right, or go to YouTube. I just got big boulders and started hammering on them. kind of the old school caveman way.
I mean, I'm pretty impressed by that.
I'm surprised like the state was just cool with you like laying. Did you have to run it by like the state or anything to build it, or you just
I got building permits and that kind of thing, and then you don't need a general contractor's license to build your own house, so I just got a big copy of the code book, and if I wanted to know how big of a header board to put over a window, I'd look in the book and find the formulas in the charts. Wow. Kind of did it like that.
And so, like you said, it sat unfinished for a long time, and we've watched some videos and things about it. And it was interesting because you said that you had lost artistic inspiration, but it wasn't something like you could just put away in a closet, like some other smaller piece of art or something like that.
I mean, if it was a really big closet,
you know, and I know you don't want to have a lot of attention about this, you know, like we reached out to you about this. You weren't seeking us out in any way, but you know, and I know, artists generally, not all artists, but don't want people sitting around looking over their shoulder while they're, you know, creating and stuff like that. However, this, you know, this piece is so big, like we said, it's like impossible to avoid. So like for better, for worse, like your castle gets a lot of visitors, like families and ghost hunters. We saw some people like made some music videos and stuff there. So what I'm getting to is like, was this open to the public all the time, or did people just like show up and maybe you knew it or maybe you didn't?
Well, for about 20 years, a couple carloads of people have showed up every day. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of no stopping it in a way. I mean, at some point I just realized this isn't my personal game of solitaire. This is, you know, it's more like a phenomenon. And I partly just stand back in awe, like, you know, your child's gone off to whatever, the Olympics or jail or somewhere, and you're just watching like, wow, how did this happen? And that's sort of what's happened. And, you know, it makes me wonder, you know, philosophically, you know, what even draws people. And then, of course, I see it up close because I'll be swinging on my mountain climbing ropes on the roof and people show up. And I think, oh, it looks good in a picture or from yonder mountainside. But when they walk down here, they're going to see a bunch of rotten boards, a total landfill mess. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, I see. But people don't do that. I mean, that's the amazing thing, that they're drawn in by what to me is very clearly, I mean, I see it equally as, you know, the glass half empty, the glass half full. I can see it. It's like just a total horrible wreck. It's a wonder and maybe a shame no one ever burned it down. Don't mean to give anyone any ideas, but I did wonder during the time it was abandoned if, you know, one day it would just disappear. But, you know, so it's easy for me to see it, you know, from the negative standpoint, but from the positive side, I mean, something really is kind of like happening there. It's kind of beautiful. I'll be, you know, swinging from my mountain climbing ropes, and I'll see, you know, a car will pull, and it's very quiet there, so I can hear cars when they're half a mile away. And I know if it's someone who's not been there before, they're slowly creeping up the mountainside. and if it's people who are there regularly, then I hear them flying up the mountain. So And so they'll be creeping up. And then I look out and I'll see, like, say, you know, a lot of times people bring children, or a lot, sometimes, you know, a couple will get out of their vehicle and they'll walk, you know, 30, 40 feet onto the property, and they'll stand there and they'll just like be staring, and then they'll embrace each other. And, and I think I helped create this moment for people. And, you know, it's really, it's really kind of amazing.
It's just, it's cool to me that you take that point of view, you know, that you look at including people in the experience rather than like just shutting people out. Cause it is, it's something people are going to want to come and see. It's so unique, you know, and I think a lot of people might just like, no, like get out of here, you know, and just, I love that perspective. So it sounds like maybe dealing with this is like a two-sided issue of like not really wanting attention, but getting some is not that big of a deal.
Yeah. And people, then there are like themes in the way that people contact me. I mean, a lot of people talk to me about, you know, getting married there sometime, and various times I've told people I'll be ready, I'll be done in a year. And then they'll like, we're setting a date. And then, you know, a year passes. But anyway, now I think I'm on a schedule. I really think I'm going to have it done in April of 2023. Okay. And this weekend I have 6 framers, because I'm sort of like a do-it-yourself autodidact. Like I said, I'll just, you know, try anything, do anything, but I can only really afford to work on it a couple days a week. And at the rate I'm going, you know, it would be another decade. And so I'm hiring a bunch of contractors so I can get it done in time for my daughter's sweet 16 birthday party. That's the plan.
Well, was there a shift in how the public saw this over time, kind of as at the beginning of the stage of when it took the back burner? Like, did people see it as something cool and then as something degraded? Or was there any shift in how they saw it over that time period?
I think over time, the main thing was, I mean, when I was first building it, they probably thought, oh, this guy's building an interesting building. And then, and now people, you know, people probably see it as something, you know, connected to me, like this idiot who's been out there swinging around on the roof by himself for years, decades. and so it's probably, so there's like a little bit of a drama there, I guess. I saw someone, people will point things out to me that other people have said or done. And someone showed me online where there was some contractor 10 miles away. And he was like, I've been in the building business for 45 years. And I bet you a RC Cola and a Moon Pie, that place ain't never getting finished.
Make sure you collect.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
And Adam, the closest neighbor is building a hobbit hole in the side of the mountain. So they don't really, you know, it's not that weird that there's a castle going up next door. I'll clarify in a second, but that there's a documentary shot on location called The Castle on Red Mountain. And I guess it went to some film festivals and things, but we couldn't really find a way to view that. Is that out there where people can see it? Do you know?
Well, I should know, but I guess I don't really know. The filmmaker is named David Delaney Mayer. He got a film degree from Duke and is a professional, you know, full-time filmmaker. And I think the plan, he shot films for PBS before. Am I saying that right? Yeah, PBS. And so that would be maybe, I don't know if I'm even supposed to say all this. It could go to like a PBS, or it could go to a Netflix or Amazon. I'm not sure where it's at in that process. Someone told me recently, but I only hear things like by rumor. Someone told me recently they thought that they heard it might be going to Netflix. I don't know.
Ooh.
But I wouldn't mind, you know, having a viewing party myself. So if it ever comes out, hopefully someone will let me know.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Adam. Well, I was just going to say, we did see a video on YouTube that was, I don't know, about 10 or 15 minutes long. That was really well done. I thought it was professionally done. And I think you were interviewed on that. And it was really informative. I enjoyed that.
It was the one you emailed us.
Yeah, that guy, Geekerman Video. Oh, my. I was pretty impressed. Yeah, because he interviewed me. It was really kind of short and sweet. He didn't cut down a whole lot or whatever. And he and he had it posted in a week. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't do video editing really, but it seemed like a lot of work to get done in a week. And it's, mm-hmm. and it's not his full-time job, but he makes videos for NC State. So I think he's used to just knocking them out.
Yeah. And he has a bunch of, like, I think he focuses on North Carolina on his account. I was looking at some other ones. It's pretty neat.
I'll tell you an example of, I don't think I said this in that video, but I get that. I can't even begin to explain, like, the, just the wildness that just appears. So there've been about maybe 5 music videos. And, you know, one day I get a call, and this is a total cold call, you know, hello, is Robert there? And a guy says, I created a piece for full orchestra about your castle.
Wow.
And I said, dude, you need to put it on YouTube. And he said, but I don't have a full orchestra. So, but I pleaded. And so the guy did put something up with them, and he was playing keyboards, and it sounded really dramatic, you know, like Bach, Staccato and Fugue in D minor, whatever. And that's what I mean. It's just like a magnet for just like unbelievable stuff. Wow. There's another guy who watches the skies, the stars, and he has apps where he always knows exactly where the solar system will be positioned in the sky. And so he'll contact me and say, I'm coming October 3rd at 3:30 a.m. so he can take pictures of the, you know, the Milky Way or whatever at the perfect angle behind the castle. So, you know, I'm actually just appreciative because it sort of makes them collaborators in the madness. So I dubbed him the Royal Astronomer, needless to say.
In a video that we saw, you mentioned you wanted the castle to be pure in spirit. What exactly did you mean by that?
I don't know how to answer that in a really short way. I began building the place, you know, without a design or anything, like I mentioned, and, you know, just hammering a board after another. And then it was only, you know, later on, I was looking back at my own process. And I felt like I had some insights about like what was leading me there. And now I feel like I have a very conscious plan of what I want to do with the place. Mm. So it's partly that very thing.
Well, obviously this is not your day job. Could you tell us how you've funded this?
Well, I mean, from almost all my adult life, all but maybe 2 years, I've just been an artist and just worked making sculptures and that kind of thing. More recently, in like the last year, I started a business where I'm making masonry structures, people's, you know, patios and walkways and walls and things out of stone and brick and whatever. And so that's going pretty well. So that's helped me get a loan and that type of thing.
But that's going to help kind of give you a bunch of capital to finish the project up.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you know, if you look at a picture of the outside, you know, the roof is kind of distinctive and all, but that's just the beginning of the madness. I have so many particular plans. I mean, I've decided to fill the inside with marble columns and all, cause I'm like a stone guy and, you know, that's just what I need to do. And I don't know, maybe there's something else psychologically going on why I can't just get the darn thing finished. But anyway, like I say, I got a plan now. So in any kind of extravagances I'm going to put in, I'm squeezing them in fast.
Well, have you ever done any crowdfunding or donations or anything like that?
Well, the funny thing is sometimes people say, hey, we want to come up and do a photo shoot. And there was a photo shoot in a fashion magazine a couple months ago. And people have come up for wedding photos. And so sometimes they'll say, you know, what do you charge? And I can't hardly bring myself to charge anything for people to visit my completely ridiculous, absurd construction mess. And so so sometimes I'll say, well, you know, I could use a Home Depot gift certificates. I mean, they just start at $5. And so I have a collection of Home Depot gift certificates people have given me. And once upon a time, you know, people often say, you should do whatever they are, Kickstarter, Indiegogo. And so once upon a time, I don't know when, you know, 7 years ago, maybe I tried to do one And with one of those companies, I don't remember which is which, one of them, if you don't raise the full amount you're asking for, you don't get a penny. And another one, you get whatever you raise, but they're not as likely to be able to raise as much. And so it seems like it went up pretty decently, but it didn't go all the way. So it didn't quite work out. And people are always saying, I could do it again. That will help me do it. But I think now that I have a different conception of the place that in part, I'll be commercializing it, for things like venue or lot and lodging. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't, so I don't feel like going hand in hand so much anymore.
And then people can't be like, I gave you $50, man. I'm going to stay.
Yeah,
exactly. For free for a week.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm not leaving. Well, I was the catalyst. I made it happen.
Exactly. So as we're speaking, progress is being made on your original vision for the castle. And you've been known to say that, or at least in a video, that you were inspired by your ancestors and kind of Eastern Europe and the structures that they lived in, which I thought was pretty cool. So what was your original vision when you were thinking about that and you decided to switch from cabin to Eastern European castle as far as, architecture and design go and stuff?
Well, I mean, I think early on I was just thinking of, I'm an artist and I like decorative, pretty things. And I think I was just thinking of, making a somewhat ornamented building, but it wasn't very well thought out or anything. I mean, I liked Gaudi's work in Barcelona. And so I had a little bit of that in mind consciously. And then a funny thing happened when I abandoned the place. I started researching my ancestors on my dad's side of the family because he died when I was like 21. And then I moved away from that part of the country. And I just didn't know so much about my ancestors there. And so I paid people to go research in state archives in Eastern Europe. And I found these exact villages where my family came from. And then I learned all this stuff about them. This is all during the time when it was abandoned. And then I was discovering the architecture. They're like a really modest kind of culture where there's not like a lot of wealth. But their churches have these, beautiful onion domes and that kind of thing. And it's all wood construction. I mean, I guess like my domes. And then that's when I started, I started thinking, and I already built all my pinnacles and spires and everything by then. And that's when, it kind of like hit me like a sort of eureka moment that it seemed like my castle really looked a lot like theirs. And so then at some point, I learned this thing, which just sounded like fanciful language, like an interesting thing to say. But I learned that Carl Jung hypothesized about ancestral memory. And so that the things that take place in your ancestors' lives could get implanted in the memories of their descendants. And so that sounds rather wild and I can't think of what the word is, like new agey or something. But a couple of days ago, I saw that there had been this study from the Emory University School of Medicine in 2013. Mm-hmm. And they took mice and they subjected them to a smell of almonds or cherries or whatever. And then they would give them like little electrical shocks. I know I shouldn't have added that detail, but anyway, so the mice, they trained the mice to be afraid of the smell. Okay. Then the mice had offspring and who knew nothing about the whole training and all. And the offspring were afraid of the smell.
Wow.
And so, it's enough to make you wonder what really, But it just, I sort of just over a period of years just sort of came about feeling like I sort of had in a way, this gets to, I guess, when you ask about a purity vision and that kind of thing, which isn't exactly what you're asking, but it's on the track of my thinking that somewhat now in my designs for the place, and this sounds strange, like you're going to nail two boards together in a different arrangement because of something in your ancestors' lives. And first of all, maybe that's what I've always already done. But then secondly, I was like artist in residence at the National Cathedral. And I guess I was the kind of person, self-taught and everything who led myself. That's where my journey path went to. And at the time, I was a complete atheist from age 14 to 40. For 26 years, I was like the most obnoxious atheist. Not that all atheists are obnoxious, obviously, but I was the obnoxious species where, you know, if I was at a party, someone would sneeze, someone would say, God bless you. I'd say, what a bunch of bullshit. And, but anyway, I'm getting a little sidetracked. But anyway, when I was at the cathedral, you know, cathedrals, they very much tell narratives in the fabric of the building and, you know, all the wood carvings and tapestries and ironwork and stonework. And so I'm very much going to be, you know, having all those sort of intricate narratives woven into the fabric of the building. And so in part, it's, I guess I could say, like going back to my ancestors and that sort of thing, their story, if you were just going to say it, sum it up in a sentence or two, it's like, you know, centuries of culture is more than a sentence or two. But if you were going to try to just really make it simple, you know, they're different, their states and their nations. And you would say like the Cherokee mm-hmm. nation, you know, was never like a European style government. But then, you know, you've had these other kind of nations in history. And so my ancestors up there on the top of the Carpathian Mountains are called Rusyn or Ruthenian, but there are tens of thousands of speakers of that language and everything. And they would feel like a somewhat put upon group in the way that, you know, various groups feel like sort of uniquely put upon in history, because maybe they have been. So I found this one little village, and where my two great grandparents who moved, you know, from there to the U.S. that they came from. So there are 30 houses in this little village and only about 30 people, which is unique. It can normally have a lot more people than houses, but it's an average of one old person per house. And, okay. It's not even a crossroads. It's like a T, but on one of the little buildings, there's a stone plaque on the wall that someone chiseled about like how the Nazis came to their little village of 30 and took it down a few more pegs. But then also, of course, you know, the Soviets and the Polish-Lithuanian Empire and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, because it's this one little village is at a place where it touches two current borders of countries, and it's 5 miles away through the forest of another border of another country. So it's really been like, you know, just been stomped on by empires forever.
Right.
And so part of my vision, like just these narratives and things that I'm telling in the castle, and it won't just be about, you know, that particular cultural background, you know, it's sort of like these ancestors of mine, if they had been a wealthier society and their crafts and art weren't just in, you know, embroidery and that kind of thing, you know, if they had built some great castle or cathedral or whatever, you know, what would that have been? And that's sort of turned into what my part of what my artistic vision is.
That's so cool.
Good for you.
'Cause you're right. I mean, a lot of those cathedrals, like you could, the more you know, the more you're going to enjoy that, right? Because there's so much going on in there, symbolism and stuff that kind of to the average observer, we don't know what most of that is. I wanted to ask you if there were any kind of rumors out there about the castle that you wanted to dispel, because I've read several that people are like, no, that's not true. He didn't quit working on it for that long because of these things. People have kind of made up stuff, I think.
Which is unfortunate.
Maybe, I don't know, but it's part of the phenomenon of the thing. You know, there are folk tales and legends.
Yeah.
The legend about his dead wife, and
yeah.
I don't even have a dead wife. But I mean, it was kind of like a nice story in a way. It sounds romantic. I don't know if she fell off the parapet or whatever, but it's just one of those things where I sit back and it's like, wow. And so it's probably good that it hasn't gone too far. The legends that appear, they haven't devoured me yet.
Okay. Yeah, there really is this kind of modern folklore going around about it. It's so unique, man. And it's so cool that you recognize that you're right in the middle of it.
Robert, as we finish up here, why have you started this revitalization effort on your castle?
Well, really, I think it has a lot to do with my children. So I have two children. Mm-hmm. They're 12 and 14. And you know, somewhere along the way in their childhood, I started realizing I really need to get up there, finish my castle for the poor children. And And then, you know, because I guess before I had children, I didn't have my first child until I was like 40. You know, so I just lived the life of an artist. And the life of an artist is one of extreme self-indulgence where, you know, today I shall write a poem about the pub. And then, you know, the people who are like, what an idiot. You know, you naturally you avoid those sorts of people. And the people who are like, tell me more about this poet, this pub vision. And I'm like, well, and so it just, it's like self-feeding, you know, and it's, I don't know, I lost track of what I was saying.
Sorry, why are you doing the revitalization effort? That's where we're going with that.
I guess I became, being a parent made me a very different kind of a person. And it made me aware of the existence of other human beings, because previously I just wasn't really. I mean, I thought that there was me and there was the world that responded however they responded, good or bad or whatever it was, but it was really just sort of me and my consciousness. And anyway, I think it's children. I think it's my children that set me back to it.
So did you mention that your daughter's 14? Are you trying to get it done for her? Is it like her venue for her sweet 16 party?
Yeah. And I found a white wrought iron Cinderella carriage, and it will be drawn by horses. And so I plan on that's going to be my last purchase right as I finish the place. In fact, even if it's 99% finished, I'm going to have the Cinderella carriage for her party. And the funny thing is, it's not even like totally her thing. She's not like some little diva, like, I demand the Cinderella carriage. It's not even that. Right. It's not even that at all, but it's really, I guess, it's sad to say, but maybe it's more my thing than hers, but I think she'll appreciate it.
Okay, good. Oh, and maybe even if it's not in the moment, she can look back and like, my dad got me a white Cinderella carriage for my birthday.
And a castle.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it's not your thing, I mean, it's pretty cool. Like how many kids are going to reflect on that? That's pretty awesome.
Exactly.
Now, I'm buying the Cinderella carriage too. I'm not quite ambitious enough to buy the horse. I mean, horses seem complicated, but I'm buying the carriage. We'll just have to bring a horseman in to pull it.
And I mean, not to open any, you know, other doors here, but it sounds like you got another kid like a couple years behind. So, I mean, I don't know how you're going to top that castle and carriage thing. So.
Well, he's a boy. So we'll just have to come up with, you know, there's sweet 16 parties for girls and, you know, some Hispanic girls have quinceañeras and yeah, the guys don't have anything because guys are just expected to be, you know, dispensable and, you know, sent off to war or whatever. And I plan on having one for him. It may be his suave 16. I haven't really quite worked all this right out, but somehow it's going to be if young dudes had the coolest possible dude oriented party, what would that be? I don't even know what that is, but maybe you guys can help me figure it out. So yeah, Corvette, he will deserve it.
A Corvette flies out of a helicopter with fire machine guns and an eagle.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, there should be some explosions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is the right attitude.
Well, Robert, what's your final goal for this castle to end up as? Like, after all the parties for your kids are done, stuff like that, what's it going to do once it's finished and sitting there?
Well, I've started planting grapes. So so we have a vineyard.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, you shouldn't have to go to the grocery store to buy wine. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I certainly have that. That's one, like, longer-term project I have going on there. And I'm getting a couple calves before the end of the year. I just have to put up half a mile of fences.
That's it. Just a quick half mile.
Yeah. And it's all rocky. Ugh. Yeah. Some people are so lucky with their soil.
So will it be, would you kind of have like a wedding venue or other, would you offer other things there as well? Or are you going to keep it more private?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think of a lot of different kind of things. But the wedding venue seems like a necessity because it's one of the things I get just a lot of inquiries on. And at one point, four ladies came out in, you know, with an appointment ahead of time from the wedding industry. So one was a planner, one was a photographer, One was a, I can't remember what, but you know, the four. And so we walked around for like 3 solid hours and they said, okay, you need to cut down this tree, but keep these trees and put double doors right here on this side so that the brides can get pictures there. Make sure your stained glass doesn't have too many dark colors. It's more better to have more whites in the stained glass. And for 4 hours, or 3 hours, I can't remember, but they just walked around giving me continuous advice on how to have, and they even said, they said, you don't need to finish it. We can just start doing weddings. All you need to do is have a nice flat spot on the hill where we have the good view and something on the ground like grass or even hay. And we can just get a tent and start throwing weddings. And so it seems like once there's actually grass and that type of thing, we'll have to do it. And I think it's good for civilization too. I think marriages are good for civilization and humanity. So I feel like, you know, there are various kind of, it sounds kind of megalomaniacal or just weird, but I feel like I can actually promote some goodness in the world.
Oh, yeah, man, that's sweet.
Good way to end it.
And those places are making a killing.
Oh,
have you seen what some of those venues charge, man? It's ridiculous.
There's a castle called, a place called Castle McCullough, which is Jamestown, North Carolina, near High Point. Mm-hmm. And so this guy came out to visit me like 17 years ago. He just showed up one day. Oh, I know. We had both, there had been an article in Our State magazine about like 7 castles in North Carolina or whatever. And so I think he was coming out to scout out the competition because he does weddings and that kind of thing. And he showed up and he saw me there, you know, hammering on my boards. And the feeling I had was that he was sort of scouting out the competition or whatever. But then he came by in like something like June of 2020, something like that. And it was right, COVID had just begun. And I think he felt like he had a whole different attitude. Like, this poor guy has accomplished nothing in 17 years. And so he was like taking me under his wing. He's, you know, 20 years older than I am. And he was saying, oh yeah, you can do so well with weddings. He told me he has 350 weddings a year.
Wow.
That's what I said.
Like one a day. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, he can have multiple ones at the same time. And he also told me, so he took us to gave us a tour of his place. And he showed me that he has parties. He has an annual Halloween party and he charges $60 a head or 40 after midnight. So say it's averaging 50 and he has 5,000 people come. And this is his, like, it's one day of that party. That's, you know, beyond the 350 weddings. And my ambitions aren't like anywhere near like that. I mean, just think it'd be nice to have the place occupied.
Well, and we want to have Adam's King Sierra party there.
Yeah.
When Adam turns 16.
we can have some, we used to have some good parties, but I'll definitely invite you to the castle warming party.
Yeah, man, do it.
Oh man, that would be such an honor.
Robert, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been a blast to have you on, man.
It has been so much fun. Yeah. Thanks, Robert.
We'll catch you later. Let us know when it's finished. All right.
I totally will. I can't wait. I can't wait to meet you in person.
Yeah. Thank you. Us too.
Bye.
See ya. See ya.
And we're done.
Yay.
Dude, that was a lot of fun.
And I'd even tell you about the blood countess.
What?
What?
Why are you holding back on us?
I don't know. Are you still rolling? Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah.
Robert, could you tell us a little bit about the interior design of the castle?
Well, you know, the funny thing is you say the castle. And of course, you know, someone looks at it and that's how I refer to it as the castle. And so partly it's topical. And, you know, how... So you know, there's going to be somewhat of a castle theme to the interior rooms. And so naturally, I have a dungeon. And so in the dungeon, most of the place will be like sweetness and light and not dark. But you know, I mean, it seems like a dungeon is a prerequisite for a castle.
Exactly.
So in the dungeon, I'm going to symbolically put the tormentors of my ancestors. Oh. And so, you know, I told you it was all the, you know, all these big empires going back centuries. Well, there was one character, and this is a real person, and her name was Elizabeth Bathory. And she's sometimes known as the Blood Countess. And she would have been like a likely inspiration for Dracula stories, if not vampire stories. And there was also like Vlad the Impaler over there and all. Well, anyway, Elizabeth Bathory in the, she gets a stained glass window. But you wouldn't know it's a dark window. You know, you just get this like, you know, nice woman in the late, like 1605 type of year, you know, in her fancy dress at the time. But so Elizabeth Bathory was prosecuted. Their court records, they interviewed 300 people for killing hundreds of young women in that area. And really? So she had like this little coterie of you know, several of her fellow noble women who would you know, help her catch these women and all. And they started, or girls, and they started out with kind of like almost a charm school to attract the peasant girls, until they started running out of peasant girls and they had to go to like lower noble women girls. But so anyway, the point of all this is she's just not merely in the general environment of my ancestors. So when her favorite daughter got married, and so she was a countess, of course, and eventually they bricked her up into a castle after the trial. But when her favorite daughter got married, the daughter got married to the count who owned that ancestral village of my family members. And so, of my ancestors. And so at the wedding, maybe not in the midst of the nuptial, you know, declarations of I do and all, but at, you know, during the wedding weekend, they killed some more peasant girls as she was marrying the count who owned my ancestral village.
Yeah.
So these are the sort of people they'll be symbolically woven into the motifs and iconography of the dungeon.
Of the dungeon. Let's make it clear.
Yeah,
exactly. It's the last laugh. It's the architectural last laugh.
I love the humor. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the sort of interior design considerations I have to make.
I love your sense of humor, man. Well, I think we're good, don't you, Adam?
Sounds good.
Yeah. Next time, we got your email. Next time we're back in Raleigh, we'll let you know. We can come scope it out if you want.
We gotta go.
Oh yeah.
We gotta go.
Dude, what a great interview!
I know, man. I love talking to him.
Yeah, I really like the fact that he just kept at it as the design changed. Like he is so creative and was really? Like. Oh, this is the next phase of the build. This is what it's going to look like. Okay, sounds good.
Whatever.
Like, it's going to become a castle now. And just kind of went with the flow, which, you know, Jay, is my specialty going.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You're the king.
Overall, I mean, I was just impressed with both him as like a person and with like the project. And next time I'm home, I really want to go visit it. But Jay, you know, we never got an answer to our question.
What?
Where's that dragon cage?
Oh, God.
What about you, man? What do you think?
I just think it's pretty cool that he doesn't get all worked up like when someone shows up to check out the place. Like a lot of people would have it locked down. Yeah. With fences and like security cameras and like laser beams and stuff. But I also love how he considered his heritage in the design and like his free-flowing approach, like kind of like what you were saying, like where he didn't intend for it to be a castle at first, but then it's like, hey, I think I'm building a castle now. we definitely have to go check that place out this summer, man.
Yeah. But Jay, you think that about wraps it up for today, or I guess wraps it up for this series now that I think about it?
That's right, Adam. It does wrap it up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's just been fun.
It has been. And so that was The Inside. Again, Robert's website is www.robertmihaly.com. Special thanks to our guest Robert the Castle Guy, and as always, our producer Dave. Our show is written, recorded, edited, and co-produced by Jay and myself, and our title music Crossroads is written by Rock Sound. We'll have a link in the show description for that, and our title music was performed by Keith Richards. Unfortunately, we'll have no more episodes coming soon since it's our series finale, but be on the lookout for some bonus content here soon. Mm-hmm. For the meantime, though, you can still listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Inside Podcasters or email us at theinsidepodcasters@gmail.com. Here's a final goodbye from the team at the Inside. Thank you all to the fans, the guests, and everyone involved for sticking with us through this crazy adventure. And keep it solid out there. From your host, Jay, and with him as always is...
Adam!
There we go. Series wrap on the Inside.
Finally.
I'm tired.
Buddy Butler, part 3.
Buddy Butler again.
Wow, Adam. Buddy Butler sounds like all blah, blah, blah.
Gotten that done without him helping me with that. Oh, Jesus.
Wow. So putting the key ignition so I can turn on the
heat. We gotta restart.
No, Buddy. Buddy Kid is the butler in training. It's like when he first comes out of the box.
He does less and less work as he gets older.
When Buddy Kid first comes out, yeah, he's just like doing everything. He's like pushes you out of the way.
Yeah.
And I thought I would build myself a little getaway place in the country where I could make my art. And I started building. I didn't have any blueprints or anything. And then eventually I started putting spires on the roof, and it's turned into just a total magnet for all kinds of craziness and people.